such things? There was no condescension in the words, only curiosity. I, Nesta blinked. Do you not know who I am?
I know you are the High Lady's sister, that you slew the King of Highburn.
Gwyn's face grew solemn, haunted.
That you, like Lady Feyre, were once mortal, human.
I was made by the cauldron, at the King of Highburn's order. Gwyn traced her fingers over the smooth dome of the invoking stone. It rippled with light at the touch.
I didn't know such a thing was possible.
My other sister, Elaine, we were forced into the cauldron and turned High Fae. Nesta swallowed again. It imparted some of itself to me.
Gwyn considered the railing, the open drop into the darkness beyond it. Like calls to like.
Yes. Gwyn shook her head, hair swaying.
Well, perhaps don't go down to level 6 again.
It's my job to shelve the books.
Make it known to Clotho, and she'll ensure those books are given to others.
It seems cowardly.
I don't wish to learn what might come crawling out of that darkness if you, cauldron maid, fear it, especially if it's drawn to you.
Nesta sank into the chair beside Gwyn's. I'm not a warrior.
You slew the King of Highburn, Gwyn repeated, with the Shadow Singer's knife.
Luck and rage, Nesta admitted. And I made a promise to kill him for what he did to me and my sister.
A priestess walked by, beheld them lounging there, and scurried off. Her fear left a tang in the air, like burned food. Gwyn sighed after her. That's Riven. She's still uncomfortable with any manner of contact with strangers.
When did she arrive?
80 years ago. Nesta started. But sorrow filled Gwyn's eyes as she explained. We do not gossip about each other here. Our stories remain our own to tell or to keep. Only Riven, Clotho, and the High Lord know what happened to her. She will not speak of it.
And there's been no help for her?
I am not privy to that information. I know of the resources available to us, but it is not my business whether Riven has utilized them.
From the worry that now etched Gwyn's face, Nesta knew she had used those services, or had at least tried.
Gwyn tucked her hair behind her arched ears. I meant to find you yesterday to thank you again for switching out that book, but I got tied up with Merrill's work.
She inclined her head.
I'm in your debt.
Nesta rubbed at a persistent cramp in her thigh.
It was nothing.
Gwyn noted the movement.
What's wrong with your leg?
Nesta gritted her teeth. Nothing. I'm training every morning with Cassian. She had no idea if Gwyn knew of him, so she clarified. The High Lord's general...
I know who he is. Everyone knows who he is.
It was impossible to read Gwyn's face.
Why do you train with him?
Nesta brushed a clump of dust off her knee. Let's just say that I was presented with several options, all designed to curb my behavior. Training with Cassian in the morning and working here in the afternoon was the most palatable.
Why do you need to curb your behavior?
Gwyn truly didn't know about what a horrible, wretched waste she'd become. It's a long story.
Gwyn seemed to read her reluctance. What manner of training is it? Combat?
Right now, it's a whole lot of balancing and stretching.
She nodded toward Nesta's leg. Such things are painful?
They are when you're as out of shape as I am.
A pathetic weakling. Two more priestesses passed by, and apparently the presence of one of them was enough to send Gwyn launching to her feet. Well, I should be getting back to Merrill, she declared. any trace of solemnity gone. She nodded to the drop into the pit.
Don't go looking for trouble.
Gwyn turned on her heel, blue flashing in her hand. The sight of that blue made Nesta blurt, "Why don't you wear that stone on your head like the others?" Gwyn pocketed the gem.
"Because I don't deserve to."
"Is this really all we'll be doing?" Nesta demanded the next morning in the training ring as she rose from what Cassian had called a curtsy squat.
"Balance and stretching?"
Cassian crossed his arms.
"So long as you keep having shit balance, yes.
I don't fall that often.
Only every few minutes." He motioned for her to do another squat.
"You still keep your weight on your right leg when you stand. It opens up your hip and your right foot rolls slightly to the side. Your entire center is off. Until we correct that, you're not starting anything more intense, no matter how nimble you are on your feet. You'd only injure yourself."
Nesta puffed out a breath as she did another squat, her right leg sweeping out behind her as she ducked low. Fire quivered along her left thigh and knee. How many curtsies had she practiced under her mother's sharp eye? She'd forgotten they were this demanding.
"Like you stand so perfectly."
"I do."
Unflinching arrogance laced every word.
"I've been training since I was a child. I was never given the chance to learn how to stand incorrectly. You have 25 years of bad habits to break."
She rose from the squat, legs shaking. She had half a mind to call in their bargain and order him to never make her do another squat again.
"And you truly enjoy this endless exercising and training?"
"Two more and then I'll tell you."
Grumbling, Nesta obeyed, only because she was tired of being as weak as a mewling kitten, as he'd called her several nights ago. When she was done, Cassian said,
"Get some water."
The mid-morning sun beat down on them relentlessly.
"I don't need you to tell me when to drink," she snapped.
"Then go ahead and faint."
Nesta met his hazel stare, the no-nonsense face, and drank the water. To stop her head spinning, she told herself. When she'd gulped down a glass, Cassian said,
"I was born to an unwed female in a settlement that makes Windhaven look like a tolerant, welcoming paradise. She was shunned for bearing a child out of wedlock and forced to give birth to me alone in a tent in the dead of winter."
Horror lurched through her. She'd known Cassian was low-born, but that level of cruelty because of it.
"What of your father?"
"You mean the piece of shit who forced himself on her and then went back to his wife and family?"
Cassian let out a cold laugh that she rarely heard.
"There were no consequences for him."
"There never are,"
Nesta said coolly. She blocked out the image of Thomas's face.
"There are here,"
Cassian growled, as if he sensed the direction of her thoughts. Cassian gestured to the city below, hidden by the mountain and the house blocking the view.
"Rhys changed the laws, here in the Night Court and in Illyria."
His face hardened further.
"But it still requires the survivor to come forward. And in places like Illyria, they make life a living hell for any female who does. They deem it a betrayal."
"That's outrageous."
"We're all fae. Forget the high fae or lesser fae bullshit. We're all immortal or close to it. Change comes slowly for us. What humans accomplish in decades takes us centuries. Longer if you live in Illyria."
"Then why do you bother with the Illyrians?"
"Because I fought like hell to prove my worth to them."
His eyes glittered.
"To prove that my mother brought some good into this world."
"Where is she now?"
He'd never spoken of her.
His eyes shuddered in a way she had not witnessed before.
"I was taken away from her when I was 3, thrown out into the snow, and in her so-called disgraced state, she became prey to other monsters."
Nesta's stomach twisted with each word.
"She did their back-breaking labor until she died alone and..."
His throat worked.
I was at Windhaven by then. I wasn't strong enough to return to help her, to bring her somewhere safe. Rhys wasn't yet High Lord, and none of us could do anything. Nesta wasn't entirely certain how they'd wound up speaking of this. Apparently Cassian realized it as well. It's a story for another time, but what I meant to try to explain is that through it all, through every awful thing, the training centered me, guided me. When I had a shit day, when I was spat on or pummeled or shunned, when I led armies and lost good warriors, when Rhys was taken by Amarantha, through all of that, the training remained. You said the other day the breathing helped you? It helps me too. It helped Feyre.
She watched the wall rise in his eyes, word for word, as if he waited for her to rip it down, rip him down.
Make of that what you will, but it's true.
Oily shame slithered through her. She'd done that, brought this level of defensiveness to him. Heaviness weighed on her, started gnawing on her insides. So Nesta said, "Show me another set of movements." Cassian scanned her face for a heartbeat, his gaze still shuttered, and began his next demonstration. The house had a taste for romance novels. Nesta stayed up later than she should have to finish the one it had left the day before, and when she returned to her room that evening, another was waiting. "Don't tell me you somehow read these." She leafed through the volume on her nightstand. In answer, two more books thumped on the surface, each one utterly filthy. Nesta let out a small chuckle. "It must get awfully dull up here." A third book plopped atop the others. Nesta laughed again, a rusty, hoarse sound. She couldn't remember the last time she'd laughed. A true, belly-deep laugh. Maybe before her mother had died. She certainly had nothing to laugh about once they'd fallen into poverty. Nesta nodded toward the desk. "No dinner tonight?" Her bedroom door only swung open to reveal the dimly lit hallway. "I've had enough of him for one day." She'd barely been able to speak to Cassian for the rest of their lesson, unable to stop thinking of how he'd put up a wall without her so much as saying a word, anticipating that she would go after him, assuming that she was so awful she couldn't have a normal conversation, that she'd mock him about his mother and their pain. "I'd rather stay here." The door opened wider. Nesta sighed. Her stomach ached with hunger. "You're as much a busybody as the rest of them," she muttered, and aimed for the dining room. Cassian sat alone at the table, the setting sun gilding his black hair in golds and reds, shining through his beautiful wings. For a heartbeat, she understood Feyre's urge to paint things, to capture sights like this, preserve them forever.
"How was the library?"
he asked, as she claimed the seat across from him. "Nothing tried to eat me today, so it was fine." A plate of roast pork and green beans appeared with a glass of water before her. He'd gone still, though.
"Something tried to eat you on another day?"
"Well, it didn't get close enough to try, but that was the general impression I received." He blinked, his siphons glowing.
"Tell me."
Nesta wondered if she'd said something wrong, but she related the incident with the darkness and finished with Gwyn's assistance. She hadn't seen the priestess after that, but at the end of the day, there had been a note on her cart that said, "Just a friendly reminder to stay away from the lowest levels." Nesta had snorted, balling up the note, but she'd kept it in her pocket. Across from her, Cassian's face was pale. "You saw Bryaxis once," Nesta said into the silence.
"A few times,"
he breathed. His skin had turned greenish.
I know we should keep hunting for Bryaxis. It's not a good thing that it's out in the world. But I don't think I could endure encountering it again.
What was it like? His eyes met hers.
My worst nightmares. And I'm not talking about petty phobias. I mean my deepest, most primal fears. I've put some of the worst, most vile monsters into the prison. But these were monsters in every sense of the word. I don't think anyone can understand unless they've seen it.
He glanced at her again, and she could tell he was bracing for her venom. Monster. She was a monster. The knowledge cut and sliced deep. But she said, hoping to let him see she wouldn't pry into his business just to hurt him.
What manner of creatures did you put in the prison?
Cassian took a bite of food, a good sign that this, at least, was acceptable territory.
When you lived in the human world, you had legends of the dread beasts and fairies who would slaughter you if you ever breached the wall, didn't you? Things that slithered through open windows to drink the blood of children. Things that were so wicked, so cruel, there was no hope against their evil.
The hair on her neck rose. Yes, those stories had always unnerved and petrified her.
They were based on the truth, based on ancient, near primordial beings who existed here before the High Fae split into courts, before the High Lords. Some call them the First Gods. They were beings with almost no physical form, but a keen, vicious intelligence. Humans and Fae alike were their prey. Most were hunted and driven into hiding or imprisonment ages ago. But some remained, lurking in forgotten corners of the land.
He swallowed another mouthful.
When I was nearing 300 years old, one of them appeared again, crawling out of the roots of a mountain. Before he went into the prison and confinement weakened him, Lanthus could turn into the wind and rip the air from your lungs, or turn into rain and drown you on dry land. He could peel your skin from your body with a few movements. He never revealed his true form, but when I faced him, he chose to appear as swirling mist. He fathered a race of fairies that still plague us, who thrived under Amarantha's reign. The Bogey. But the Bogey are lesser, mere shadows compared to Lanthus. If there is such a thing as evil incarnate, it is him. He has no mercy, no sense of right or wrong. There is him, and there is everyone else, and we are all his prey. His methods of killing are creative and slow. He feasts on fear and pain as much as the flesh itself.
Her blood chilled.
How did you trap such a thing?
Cassian tapped a spot on his neck where a scar slashed beneath his ear.
I quickly learned I could never beat him in combat or magic. Still have the scar here to prove it.
Cassian smiled faintly.
So I used his arrogance against him, flattered and taunted him into trapping himself in a mirror bound with ash wood. I bet him the mirror would contain him, and Lanthus bet wrong. He got out of the mirror, of course, but by that time I'd dumped his miserable self into the prison.
Nesta lifted a brow. He cut her a sharp smile that didn't meet his eyes and said,
"Not just a brute after all."
No, he wasn't, even though she'd said as much to him. But she'd never once believed it. Cassian went on.
Of all the occupants of the prison, Lanthus is the one I dread finding a way out.
Would such a thing ever happen?
I don't think so, thank the cauldron. That prison is inescapable, unless you're Amren.
Nesta didn't want to talk about Amren, or think about her. You said you put others in.
Half of her didn't want to know. He shrugged as if it were of no consequence that he had done such remarkable things.
Seven-headed Lubia, who made the mistake of surfacing from the caves of the deep ocean to prey on girls along the western coast. Blue Annis, who was a terror to behold. Cobalt skin and iron claws, and, like Lubia, a taste for female flesh. Lubia at least swallowed her prey swiftly. Annis? She took longer. Annis was like Lanthus in that regard.
His throat bobbed, and he tugged back the collar of his shirt to reveal another scar, the horrific thick one above his left pectoral. She'd spied it the other day in the training ring.
That's all that remains of it now, but Annis had shredded through my chest with those iron claws and was nearly at my heart when Azriel intervened. So I suppose her capture is shared between the two of us.
He drummed his fingers on the table.
And then there was... I've heard enough.
Her words were breathless. I'll never sleep tonight. She shook her head, taking another bite of food. I don't know how you can, having faced all that. He leaned back in his seat.
You learn to live with it. How to block the horrors from your present thoughts.
He added a touch quietly,
but they still lurk there, in the back of your mind.
She wished she knew how to do such things, to push all the thoughts that devoured her behind some wall or into a hole within her, so she could bury them deep. Cassian asked her, voice still quiet,
the darkness in the library. Do you think it reacted to you specifically?
When she said nothing, he pressed.
Because of your powers?
I don't have any powers, she lied. Training with Amryn hadn't done a lick to help her understand them anyway.
Then who left that handprint on the stairs?
She didn't bother to look pleasant. Maybe Lucian.
He's got fire in his veins. He said your fire was different from his, that it burned cold somehow.
Perhaps you should lock me up in that prison then. He set down his fork.
I'm just asking you a question.
Does it matter if I have powers? Cassian shook his head in what seemed to be a mixture of admiration and disgust.
You might have been born human, but you're pure fairy. Answering questions with questions, evading an honest answer.
I can't tell if that's a compliment or not.
It's not.
His teeth flashed.
The kind of powers you have aren't the sort that should sit idly by. They need an outlet and training.
Balancing and stretching. His jaw clenched.
What happened with you and Amryn?
Why so many questions tonight?
Because we're talking like normal people and I want to know about all of it.
Nesta rose from the table, aiming for the door.
What does it matter to you? Let's not retread old territory, Ness.
She threw over her shoulder. I hadn't realized we'd moved beyond it.
Bullshit.
Here's the part where you remind me everyone hates me, and I leave. Cassian shot from his seat, blocking her path to the door in three strides. She'd forgotten how fast he was, how graceful despite his size. He glowered down at her.
It never mattered to me whether you took half the cauldron's power or a drop. It still doesn't matter.
Why? Nesta couldn't stop herself from asking. Why do you even bother? His features turned stark.
Why did you stay at my side when we went up against the King of Hybern during that last battle?
As if that were an answer. She couldn't bear it, this talk, the expression on his face. Because I was a stupid fool. She shoved past him.
What is it you're afraid of?
He asked, following her into the hall. She drew up short. I'm not afraid of anything.
Liar.
Nesta turned slowly, let him see every bit of anger rippling through her. Cassian's eyes gleamed in savage satisfaction. His siphons flared, casting red light upon the stones,
like watery blood had been spilled. His mouth twisted to the side in a crooked, mocking grin. Do you know how your eyes glow when your power rises to the surface? Like molten steel. Like silver fire. He'd done it on purpose, riled her like this, to get her to show her hand.
Nesta's fingers curled into claws at her sides. She took a step toward him. Cassian held his ground. She took another step. Another, until they were close enough that a heaving breath would have had her chest brushing his, until she was baring her teeth at his still smirking face. Cassian surveyed her, gazed into her eyes and breathed. Beautiful. He didn't halt the hand she laid on his muscled chest, or when she pushed against that chest, backing him into the wall, his wings splaying on impact. He just stared and stared at her, marveling. Hungry. Nesta didn't, couldn't move as Cassian leaned to whisper in her ear. The first time I saw that look on your face, you were still human. Still human? And I nearly went to my knees before you. His breath caressed the shell of her ear, and she couldn't stop her eyes from fluttering shut. His smile brushed against her temple. Your power is a song, and one I've waited a very, very long time to hear. Nesta.
Her back arched slightly at the way he said her name. The way he bit out the second syllable, like he was imagining clamping his teeth down on other parts of her. But only her hand bridged their bodies. Only her hand, now bunching up his shirt, his thundering heartbeat pulsing beneath it. Until Cassian lowered his face an inch and grazed the tip of his nose along her neck. Beneath her hand, his chest heaved upward as he inhaled a great, greedy breath of her scent.
Too far. She shouldn't have let herself go this far with him, let him this close. Yet she couldn't withdraw, couldn't do anything but let him brush his nose over her neck again. The urge to press her body into his, to feel his warmth and hardness grinding into her, nearly overrode every rational thought. Cassian's hands remained at his sides, though, as if waiting for her to give permission. Nesta pulled her head back, away, just enough to see his features. Her knees nearly wobbled at the desire blazing in them. Liquid, unrelenting desire, all fixed upon her. She couldn't get a breath down as she drowned in that stare, as low, sensitive parts of her tightened and began throbbing, her breasts becoming heavy and aching. His nostrils flared, scenting that too. She couldn't do this to him, to herself. Couldn't. Nesta began to withdraw her hand from his chest, but he slid his own atop it, rubbed his thumb over the back of her hand, and just that graze of calloused flesh had her grinding her teeth, unable to think, to breathe. Cassian whispered in her ear, "Do you know what I'm going to think of tonight?" A small sound must have come out of her, because he grinned as he stepped to the side, let go of her hand. The absence of his warmth, his scent, was like a bucket of ice water. He smiled, nothing but wickedness and challenge. I'm going to think of that look on your face. He took another step down the hall. I'm always thinking of that look on your face. She couldn't sleep. The sheets chafed, strangled her, smothered her with their heat, until sweat ran down her body.
I'm always thinking of that look on your face.
Nesta lay in the darkness, her breathing uneven, her body flushed and aching. She'd barely been able to focus on reading when she'd returned to her room, and she'd been tossing and turning in bed for what had felt like hours now.
I'm always thinking of that look on your face.
She could see it. Cassian in his own bed, sprawled out like a dark king, gripping himself, pumping hard. She managed to whisper into the room, "Come back at dawn." She didn't know if the house obeyed, didn't find out if it understood why she wanted privacy as she traced her hand up her nightgown, the slide of silk against her skin nearly unbearable. She moaned into her pillow as her fingers slid between her legs, instantly slippery with the wetness pooled there, which hadn't gone away since she'd been left standing in that hallway. Her hips arched into the touch, and she gritted her teeth, letting out a long hiss as she dragged her fingers down her aching, throbbing center.
I'm always thinking of that look on your face.
She slid her fingers in deep, writhing at the intrusion, unable to stop seeing Cassian's face, that half smile, that light in his eyes, the powerful body and beautiful wings. She withdrew her fingers nearly to their tips, and as she plunged them back in, it was Cassian's hand she pictured there, felt there. Cassian's other hand that rose to clasp her breast, squeezing hard, just the way she liked it, a sharp, slight edge of pain to heighten the pleasure. It was Cassian's hand she rode, biting her lip to keep her moaning contained. It was Cassian's hand that brought her over the edge and into a release so intense she nearly cried out. It was Cassian's hand that slid into her over and over again, release after release, until Nesta lay wrung out and panting upon the bed, with only the darkness to hold her.
Chapter 16. Cassian hadn't slept well. It was hard to sleep well when he'd been so aroused he had had to pleasure himself not once, but three times, just to calm the hell down enough to close his eyes. But he awoke before dawn, aching for her, her scent still in his nose, and another release had barely taken the edge off. He'd told her exactly what he planned to do last night. But meeting Nesta's stare over the breakfast table the next morning was more uncomfortable than he'd anticipated. She'd beaten him to the table and had been reading a book while she ate. It lay closed now, but from the spine he gleaned that it was one of the romances she favored so much. To break the silence, Cassian asked, "What are you reading?"
Color stained Nesta's pale cheeks, and he could have sworn it took an effort of will for her to meet his eyes, too. A romance.
I gathered that. What's this one about?
She dropped her gaze quickly, but the blush remained.
He knew it had nothing to do with the novel.
But she lifted her eyes to him again, spine stiffening, like she was working hard as hell to make herself meet his stare. Her fingers clenched her fork. And when he looked at them, she pulled her hand under the table, as if it were blazing with proof. His blood heated as he realized the blush, her embarrassment. He made himself take deep, steadying breaths. They had to train together for the next 2 hours.
Being at attention wasn't only unhelpful, but inappropriate in the training ring. It didn't make him stop picturing it, that hand between her legs. Her body as aching for release as his had been. The way she'd probably bitten her lip, just as he had,
to keep from crying out. His cock grew hard, pushing at his pants to the point of pain. Cassian shifted in his seat, trying to free up any space for himself. It only succeeded in making the hard seam rub against his cock, the friction enough to make him grit his teeth. Training. They had training. The book, Nesta said, a bit breathlessly, is about... Her nostrils flared and her eyes went a bit unfocused. A book. Interesting, Cassian murmured. Sounds great. He had to get out of this room, had to sort his shit out before he went upstairs. The heat between them didn't belong in the training ring. Where the fuck was Az when he needed him? Cassian had played buffer for Moore for years. Where the fuck was she when he needed her? But he couldn't rise from his chair. If he did, Nesta would see precisely how she'd affected him. That is, if she hadn't already sensed it and understood the shift in his smell. And if she looked at the bulge in his pants with that heat she'd had in her eyes last night, the heat he'd come to just picturing her, he might very well make a fool of himself. It was a risk he was willing to take, had to take before he laid her flat on the table and removed her clothing piece by piece. Cassian shot out of his chair, muttering, "I'll see you there," and left. "The book?" Nesta repeated to herself, staring at her porridge. "Is about a book?" She cupped her forehead in her hands. "Idiot." At least Cassian hadn't seemed to be listening, but whatever willingness had been in his eyes last night seemed reluctant today. As if he couldn't help, didn't want that heat between them, that tension. He'd practically run out of the room to avoid her. Training would be awful. He was waiting in the ring, the portrait of a swaggering warrior. Nesta didn't dare look at his pants, to what she could have sworn she'd glimpsed straining at the stays and buttons when he'd fled the room. But if he appeared unruffled, then fine. She'd match him in it. Nesta rolled her shoulders, approaching him. More stretching and balance? No. Their eyes met, and there was only clear, determined calm and a challenge. We'll do the warm-up, and then we're moving into some core work. She gaped. Her core? Abdominals, he clarified. And pink washed across his face. He cleared his throat. Filthy mind. He flicked her cheek. Too much smut. She batted him away and gestured to the muscles hidden beneath his shirt. You're gonna make me look like that? His low laugh rippled over her body. No one can look like this but me, Ness. Arrogant ass.
Rhysand and Azriel do. She said sweetly.
I've got one or two muscles on them.
I don't see it. He winked.
Maybe they're in other places.
She couldn't help it, couldn't stop. Not the flash of desire, but the smile that overtook her face. She huffed a laugh. Cassian stared like he hadn't seen her before. His shock was enough that Nesta dropped her smile.
All right, she said.
Warm up. Then abdominals.
She hated abdominal exercises, mostly because she couldn't do them. I knew you didn't have much muscle,
Cassian observed as Nesta lay belly down on the ground, having collapsed onto her front after trying to hold a full body plank.
But this is absolutely pathetic.
Aren't you supposed to be my inspirational teacher?
You can't do more than 5 seconds,
she spat. And how long can you do?
5 minutes.
Nesta pushed herself onto her elbows. I'm sorry if I haven't had 500 years of core work.
I asked you to hold that plank for 30 seconds.
She shoved onto her knees, stomach aching.
He'd had her doing curls upward, then leg extensions while lying on her back, and then lifting a smooth 5-pound rock over her head while she'd tried to raise herself from lying prone into a sitting position using only her stomach muscles. She hadn't been able to do more than one or two of any of them before her body gave out. No amount of will or grit could make it move. This is torture. Bracing her hands on her knees, Nesta pointed to the ring. If you're so perfect, do everything you just ordered me to do. Cassian snorted. A 10-year-old Illyrian boy could do it all in the span of a few minutes. Then do your big, tough male routine. He smirked. All right. You want to mouth off? Then I'll show you my big, tough male routine. He slung his shirt off, tied back his hair. And this was a different sort of torture. To watch him go through the same exercises, only harder, heavier, faster. To watch the muscles of his stomach ripple. Muscles everywhere ripple. To watch sweat glisten and then run down his golden body, over his tattoos, along the 8-pointed star of their bargain on his spine, before sliding into the waist of his pants. But he'd been professional during their lesson, utterly professional and distant, as if this training ring was sacred to him. Nesta couldn't tear her eyes away as he completed his exercises, panting softly. She tried not to wonder if that panting was how he'd sounded last night when he'd pleasured himself. But Cassian's hazel eyes were clear, triumphant. In another age, another world, he might have been deemed a warrior god by mortals. After what he'd told her about the monsters he'd put in the prison, he might very well be considered a great hero in this age. The kind that would one day be whispered about around a fire. People would name their children after him. Warriors would want to be him. A fine warrior would be known as Cassian Reborn. She'd called him a brute. What? Cassian wiped the sweat from his face. She asked to distract herself from her thoughts. Are there truly no female fighting units amongst the Illyrians? She hadn't seen any during the war. His smile faded. We tried once and it failed spectacularly. So, no, there aren't. Because Illyrians are backward and horrible. He winced. Have you been talking to Az? Just my observations. He untied his hair, the thick, straight locks falling around his face. The Illyrians, I told you, progress is slow. It's an ongoing goal of ours, me and Rhys, I mean.
It's that hard for the females to become warriors?
It's not just the training. It's running the social gauntlet, too. And then there's the blood rite, which they'd also have to complete.
What's the blood rite?
What it sounds like. He rubbed his neck. When an Illyrian warrior comes into his full power, usually in his 20s, he has to go through the blood rite before he can qualify as a full warrior and adult. Would-be warriors from every clan and village get sent in, usually 3 or 4 from each, all of them scattered across an area in the Illyrian mountains. We're left there for a week with 2 goals, survival and making it to Ramiel.
What's Ramiel? She felt like a child with these questions, but her curiosity got the better of her.
Our sacred mountain.
He drew a familiar symbol in the dirt, an upward-pointing triangle with 3 dots above it. A mountain, she realized, and 3 stars.
It's the symbol of the Night Court. The blood rite always takes place when Arctos, Carinth and Orestes, our 3 holy stars, shine above it for 1 week a year. On the final day of the rite, they're directly above its peak.
So you hike the mountain?
We kill our way to the mountain.
His eyes had turned hard.
were drugged and dumped into the wilderness with nothing but our clothes.
And you have to participate?
Once you're in, you can't leave, at least until the rite is over, or you reach the peak of Ramiel. If anyone breaks into the rite to extract or save you, the law declares that both of you will be hunted down and killed for the transgression. Even Rhys isn't exempt from those laws.
Nesta shivered. It sounds barbaric.
That's not the half of it. A spell is in place, so our wings are rendered useless and no magic may be used.
He held up a hand, displaying the red siphon on its back.
Magic is rare amongst the Illyrians, but when it does manifest, it requires siphons to be controlled, filtered into something usable. But it gives us an advantage over the other Illyrians without it. So the spell levels the playing field. Illyrians do possess magic on one night a year, though. The night before the Blood Rite, when the warband leaders can winnow the drugged novices into the wilds. Don't even ask me why that is. No one knows.
Asriel can winnow all the time, though.
As is different in a lot of ways.
His tone didn't invite further questioning. So, without the use of magic in the rite, you kill each other the normal way. Swords and daggers.
Weapons are banned, too. At least ones that are brought in from the outside. But you can build your own. You need to build your own, or else you'll be slaughtered.
By the other warriors?
Yes. Rival clans, enemies, assholes seeking notoriety, all of it. In some villages, the higher the kill count, the more glory you bring. The most backward clans claim the slaughter is to thin out the weaker warriors, but I always thought it was a grand waste of any potential talent.
Cassian dragged a hand through his hair.
And then there are the creatures that roam the mountains. The ones that can easily bring down an Illyrian warrior with claws and fangs.
A murky memory surfaced, of Feyre telling her about the horrible beasts she'd once encountered in the region. Cassian went on.
So you're facing all of that while trying to make your way to Ramiel's slopes. The majority of the males forget to save enough strength for the end of the week to make the climb. It's a full day and night of brutal climbing, where one fall can kill you. Most don't even make it to the base of the mountain. But if they do, the opponent changes. You're not facing other warriors. You're pitting yourself, your very soul, against the mountain. It's usually that fact that breaks anyone who tries to scale it.
And what? You make it to the top and get a trophy?
Cassian snorted, but his words were serious.
There's a sacred stone atop it. Touch the stone first and you win. It will transport you out immediately.
And everyone else when the week is done?
Whoever is left standing is considered a warrior. Where you are when it ends sorts you into one of three echelons of warrior, named after our holy stars. Arctosian, the ones who don't make it to the mountain but survive. Oristian, the ones who make it to the mountain but don't reach the top. And Carinthian, the ones who scale the summit and are considered elite warriors. Touching the stone atop Ramiel is to win the rite. Only a dozen warriors in the past 5 centuries have reached the mountain.
You touched the stone, I take it?
Rhys, Az, and I touched it together, even though we were deliberately separated from each other at the beginning.
Why?
The leaders feared us and what we'd become. They thought the warriors or beasts would handle us if we didn't have each other to lean against. They were wrong.
His eyes glittered fiercely.
What they learned was that we love each other as true brothers, and there was nothing that we wouldn't do, no one we wouldn't kill, to reach each other, to save each other. We killed our way across the mountains and made it through the breaking. the worst of Ramiel's three routes to the top. And we won the damn thing. We touched the stone in the same moment, the same breath, and entered the Corinthian tier of warriors.
Nesta failed to keep the shock off her face. And you say only 12 have become Corinthian in 500 years?
No. 12 made it to the mountain and became Oristian. Only 3 others besides us won the blood rite and became Corinthian.
His throat bobbed.
They were fine warriors and led exemplary units. We lost 2 of them against Tyburn.
Likely in that blast that had decimated 1,000 of them. The blast she'd shielded him from. Him, and only him.
Nesta's stomach clenched, nausea sliding through her. She forced herself to take a long breath.
So you think females can't participate in the rite?
More would likely win the damn thing in record time. But no, I wouldn't want even her participating in the rite.
The unspoken part of his reasoning lay coldly in his eyes. There would be a different, worse kind of violence to defend against, even if the females were as highly trained as the males. Nesta shivered.
Could you have a female unit without them taking the blood rite? They would never be honored as true warriors without it, without one of those 3 titles. Well, I would consider them warriors, but not the rest of the Illyrians. No other units would fly with them. They'd consider it a disgrace and an insult.
She frowned, and he held up his hands.
Like I said, change comes slowly. You heard the bullshit Devlin spewed about your cycle. That's considered progress. In the past, they'd kill a female for picking up a weapon. Now they decontaminate the blade and call themselves modern thinkers.
Disgust contorted his features. Nesta eased to her feet and scanned the sky. Her head had cleared, only slightly. She didn't relish the prospect of shelving books when her body was already aching. But perhaps she'd see Gwyn.
Training the Illyrian females, Cassian went on, wouldn't be about fighting in our wars. It would be about proving they're equally as capable and strong as the males. It would be about mastering their fear, honing the strength they already have.
What do they fear?
Becoming my mother, he said softly. Going through what she endured.
What the priestesses behind the mountain had endured.
Nesta thought of the quiet priestesses who did not leave the mountain, who dwelled in the dimness. Riven flashed through her memory, hurrying past, unable to stomach a stranger's presence. Gwyn, with her bright eyes that sometimes darkened with shadows.
Cassian tilted his head to the side at her silence.
What is it?
Would you train non-Illyrian females?
I'm training you, aren't I?
I mean, would you consider... She didn't know how to elegantly phrase it, not like silver-tongued Rhysand. The priestesses in the library. If I invited them to train with us here, where it's private and safe, would you train them?
Cassian blinked slowly. Yes. I mean, of course. But, he winced. Nesta, many of the females in the library do not want to be, cannot stand to be, around males again.
Then we'll ask one of your female friends to join. More, or anyone else you can think of.
The priestesses might not even be able to stomach having me present.
You'd never hurt anyone like that. His eyes softened slightly.
It's not about that for them. It's about the fear, the trauma they bear. Even if they know I'd never do that to them, I might still drag up memories that are incredibly difficult for them to face. You said this training would help me with my problems. Perhaps it could help them. At the very least, give them a reason to get outside for a bit. Cassian watched her for a long moment. Then he said,
Whoever you can get up here with us, I'll gladly train. Moore's away, but I can ask Feyre.
Not Feyre. Nesta hated the words, the way his back stiffened. She couldn't look at him as she said, How could she explain the tangle between her and her sister? The self-loathing that threatened to consume her every time she looked at her sister's face.
All right, Cassian repeated. Not Feyre, but I need to give her and Rhys a heads up. You should probably ask Clotho for permission, too.
A warm hand clasped her shoulder and squeezed.
I like this idea, Ness. His hazel eyes shone bright. I like it a lot.
And for some reason, the words meant everything.
Chapter 17. I have a proposition for you. Stomach muscles throbbing, legs aching, Nesta stood before Clotho's desk as the priestess finished writing on whatever manuscript she was annotating, her enchanted pen scratching along. Clotho lifted her head when the pen dotted its last mark and wrote on a scrap of paper, Yes? Would you allow your priestesses to train with me every morning in the ring at the top of the house? Not all of them, just whoever might be interested. Clotho sat perfectly still. Then the pen moved. Train for what? To strengthen their bodies, to defend themselves, to attack if they wish, but also to clear their minds, help steady them.
Who will oversee this training? You?
No, I'm not qualified for that. I'll be training with them. Her heart pounded. She wasn't sure why. Cassian will be overseeing it. He's not handsy. I mean, he's respectful and... Nesta shook her head. She sounded a proper fool. Beneath the shadows of her hood, Nesta could sense Clotho's gaze lingering upon her. The pen moved again. Not many will come, I'm afraid. I know, but even one or two, I'd like to offer. Nesta gestured to a pillar beyond Clotho. I'll put a sign-up sheet there. Whoever wants to join is welcome. Again, that long stare from beneath the hood, its weight like a phantom touch. Then Clotho wrote, Whoever wants to join has my blessing. Nesta pasted the sign-up sheet onto the pillar that day. No one had inked their name on it by the time she departed. She awoke early, made the trek to the library to check the list, and found it still empty.
It'll take time,
Cassian consoled her when he read whatever lay etched on her face as she stepped into the training ring. He added a shade softly, Keep reaching out your hand. So Nesta did. Every afternoon when she arrived at the library, she checked the list. Every evening when she left, she checked it as well. It was always empty. At training, Cassian began to instruct her on basic footwork and body positioning in hand-to-hand combat. No punches or kicks, not yet. Nesta held that infernal plank for 10 seconds, then 15, then 20, 30. Cassian added weights to her exercises in order to build up her flimsy arms. Heavy stones with carved handles to carry while she did her lunges and squats, all while she breathed and breathed and breathed. She tried the stairs again, made it to step 500 before her muscles demanded she turn around. The next night she halted on 610, then 750. She didn't know what she'd do at the bottom. Find a tavern or a pleasure hall and drink herself stupid, she supposed. If she made it, she'd deserve it, she told herself with each step. At night, exhaustion weighed so heavily, she could barely eat and bathe before tumbling into bed, barely read a chapter of a book before her eyelids drooped. She'd found a smutty novel she'd already read and loved in one of the trunks Elaine had packed and had laid it on the desk. She'd said to the air, "I found this for you. It's a present." The book had vanished into nothing, but in the morning she'd found a bouquet of autumnal flowers upon her desk, the glass vase bursting with asters and chrysanthemums of every color. A week passed during which she barely saw Gwyn, though she learned through Clotho that Meryl had been pushing her hard with the Valkyrie research. But Nesta had so many books to shelve that the hours passed swiftly, especially once she began using the books to train. While striding up the ramp, she'd hold a heavy stack and execute an assortment of lunges. Several times she caught passing priestesses a level above, peering at her while she did so. Every day she checked the sign-up sheet on the pillar beyond Clotho's desk. Empty. Day after day after day. "Keep reaching out your hand," Cassian had told her. But what would it matter, she began to wonder, if no one bothered to reach back?
"You hold your fist like that when you punch someone and you'll shatter your thumb."
Panting with sweat running down her back in great rivers, Nesta scowled at Cassian. She held up the fist he'd ordered her to make, her thumb inside her folded fingers.
"What's wrong with my fist?"
"Keep your thumb atop the knuckles on your pointer and middle finger." He made a fist to demonstrate and wiggled the thumb tucked against his fingers. "If your thumb makes the hit, it's going to hurt like hell." Studying the fist Cassian extended, Nesta mimicked the positioning with her own hand.
"What then?"
He jerked his chin. "Get into the position we went over yesterday, feet parallel, rooting your strength into the ground."
"I know, I know,"
Nesta muttered, and took up the stance he'd spent 3 days making her practice. She observed her feet as they shuffled into position, then she bent her knees slightly, bobbing twice to make sure she'd secured her center of power. Cassian circled her.
"Good. Any punch you make should be swift and precise. Not a wild swing that'll knock you off balance and deprive your arm of strength. Your body and breath will power the punch more than your actual arm."
He took a similar stance and struck at the air. He moved so smoothly, so brutally, that the blow was done before she could blink. He held out his arm when he'd finished, muscles shifting. He'd rolled up his sleeves against the warm autumn day, but hadn't taken his shirt off entirely. In the stark sunlight, the tattoo along his left arm seemed to drink down the brightness. "Line up the first two knuckles with your forearm. That's what you'll want to hit with, and the strength in your arm will carry right through to them. If you hit with your ring finger and pinky, you'll break your hand."
"I had no idea punching was so fraught with peril."
"Apparently it takes brains to be a brute." Nesta flattened her brows, but focused on aligning her forearm and the knuckles he'd indicated.
"That's it?"
"To hit with the proper knuckles, you need to angle your wrist downward, just a fraction."
"Why?"
"So your wrist doesn't snap." She lowered her arm. "Considering how many ways there are to break my own hand when punching someone, it doesn't seem worth it."
"That's why a good warrior knows when to pick his battles."
He lowered his fist.
"You have to ask yourself if the risk is worth it each time."
"And do you always throw a punch with perfect form?"
"Yes,"
Cassian said without 1 ounce of doubt. He shook his hair from his eyes.
"Well, most of the time. There have been some brawls when I didn't have the right angle and balance, but a punch, even one that could break my hand, was the best way out of a bind. I've shattered my hand,"
he squinted at the sky as if doing a mental tally, Oh, probably 10 times.
In 500 years.
I can't be perfect every moment of every day, Ness.
His eyes flickered. There had been no repeats of that madness in the hallway last week, and she'd been too tired at night to even make it up to the dining room, let alone to pleasure herself in bed.
Right, he said. Now, shift your hips into the punch.
He struck at the air again. He moved more slowly this time, letting her see how his body flowed into the blow.
It will engage your core and your shoulder, both of which add extra power.
Another jab. So those abdominal exercises are useful beyond wanting to show off your muscles. He threw her a wry grin.
You really think this is all just for show?
I think I've caught you looking at yourself in that mirror at least 12 times each lesson. Nesta nodded to the slender mirror across the ring. He chuckled.
Liar. You use that mirror to watch me when you think I'm not paying attention.
She refused to let him see the truth on her face, refused to so much as lower her head. She focused again on her stance.
All business today, huh?
You want me to train, Nesta said coolly.
So train me.
Even if no priestesses showed up, even if she was a stupid fool for hoping that they would, she didn't mind this training. It cleared her head, required so much thinking and breathing that the roaring thoughts had little chance to devour her whole. Only in the quiet moments did those thoughts pounce again, usually if she lost focus while working in the library or bathing. And when that happened, the stairwell always beckoned. The infernal 10,000 steps. But would it do anything? The training, the work, the stairs, beyond keeping her busy?
The thoughts still waited like wolves to swarm her, to rip her apart. I loved you from the first moment I held you in my arms.
The wolves prowled closer, claws clicking.
Where'd you go?
Cassian asked, hazel eyes dim with worry. Nesta took up her stance again. It sent the wolves retreating a step. Nowhere. Elaine was in the private library. Nesta knew it before she'd cleared the stairs, covered in dust from the library. Her sister's delicate scent of jasmine and honey lingered in the stoned hall, like a promise of spring, a sparkling river that she followed to the open doors of the chamber. Elaine stood at the wall of windows, clad in a lilac gown, whose close-fitting bodice showed how well her sister had filled out since those initial days in the night court. Gone were the sharp angles, replaced by softness and elegant curves. Nesta knew she herself had looked like that at one point, even if Elaine's breasts had always been smaller. She peered down at herself, bony and gangly. Her sister turned toward her, glowing with health. Elaine's smile was bright as the setting sun beyond the windows.
I thought I'd drop by to see how you were doing.
Someone had brought Elaine here, since there was no way in hell she had climbed those 10,000 steps. Nesta didn't return her sister's smile, but rather gestured to her body, the leathers, the dust.
I've been busy.
You look a little better than you did a few weeks ago.
The last time she'd seen Elaine, a week before she'd come to the house, she'd passed her sister in the bustling market square they called the Palace of Bone and Salt. And though Elaine had halted, no doubt intending to speak to her, Nesta had kept walking, hadn't looked back before vanishing into the throng. Nesta didn't wish to consider how poorly she'd looked then, if the picture she presented now was better.
You've got good coloring, I mean, Elaine clarified,
striding from the windows to cross the room. She stopped a few feet away, as if holding herself back from the embrace she might have given, like Nesta was some sort of disease-ridden leper.
How many times had they been in this room during those initial months? How many times had it been this way, only with their positions switched? Elaine had been the ghost then, too thin, with her thoughts turned inward. Somehow, Nesta had become the ghost, worse than a ghost, a wraith whose rage and hunger were bottomless, eternal. Elaine had only needed time to adjust, but Nesta knew she herself needed more than that.
Are you enjoying your time up here?
Nesta met her sister's warm brown eyes. When human, Elaine had easily been the prettiest of the three of them. And when she'd been turned high fae, that beauty had been amplified. Nesta couldn't put her finger on what changes had been wrought beyond the pointed ears, but Elaine had gone from lovely to devastatingly beautiful. Elaine never seemed to realize it. It was always that way between them, Elaine sweet and oblivious, and Nesta, the snarling wolf at her side, poised to shred anyone who threatened her.
Elaine is pleasant to look at, her mother had once mused while Nesta sat beside her dressing table, a servant.